Series on relationships, and we know relationships come in all different forms and different kinds of ways, and the word we use to begin this series was dimensions. Jesus modeled three different dimensions of relationships, and that was up with the Father, and then in with his more intimate relationships with the disciples, and then even more closely with the three disciples, Peter, James, and John. And then from that, he went out. So up, in, and out is the three-dimensional relationships. And last week, we talked about the most intimate of inward relationships, and that was the marriage relationship, and Mindy Ross was here to speak on that. And this week, we have a different kind of out relationship that we're talking about, particularly that relationships that can be developed and maybe even destroyed due to our presence online and especially social media. And I'm not an expert in this area, as I said before, and I wanted to provide for you a more expert opinion on this topic than what I could give you, because my best advice would be something along like this. If you're 18 and younger, burn your phone. Don't get a burner phone. Burn your phone. And if you're like guys, if you're like older than like 30 and like some hot 22-year-old like friends you, decline, okay? Because it's not real, I promise you, okay? It's not real. Don't do it. Don't take the bait. That's my advice, okay? So instead of that, you know, being your message, I asked Lindsay to come, and I reached out to Directions Counseling Group in Worthington because they have a Christian-based counseling method, I think, with a very large staff and a wide variety of expertise on the staff. And I reached out specifically two directions on this social media kind of topic, and Lindsay Pearson and Sarah Sparhawk responded enthusiastically, and as I said before, tonight Sarah will be talking with our student ministry. So for this morning, I'm really grateful that Lindsay would come out with us, and Lindsay has her Master's of Science in Counseling from the University of Dayton. She works with children and adolescents and their families, and she has a specialty of working with family members who struggle with autism, and somewhere on the autism spectrum disorder and other developmental disabilities. She helps parents with behavioral and social-emotional challenges that their children are facing. And Lindsay believes that these types of issues can affect the entire family, and enjoys working with children and their families to strengthen, support, and build coping skills. Over her time as a counselor, Lindsay has become somewhat of an expert in this particular field of social media usage, the dangers and responsibilities. She said she could talk for hours on this subject, but I gave her 30 minutes. And I think we have some handouts that we made some copies of. So afterwards, Tina, did you get those? Okay, so Bethany's got them there. We'll have them at the back for you if you want some handouts there. We got about 30 each of those. So I hope that her time with us this morning is fruitful. I'm really looking forward to it personally, to know some of these things about social media so I can help not only myself but help my kids. And then tonight, of course, we got some stuff for them as well. So please give her your best attention, and please help me welcome Lindsay Pearson.
There I am. Okay. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me here this morning. I'm glad to be here. Bear with me. I'm recovering from a stomach bug, so I'm a little slower moving than usual. I, in this field, working with kids and teenagers and their families, social media kind of became a part of it, whether I liked it or not. So learning about it and what it means for us as parents, what it means for kids, what it means for our future, is pretty important, because it can become all-consuming. And in this generation, it is very much entwined in everything we do. How many of you in this room yourselves use social media? Almost everybody. How many of you have teenagers or will have teenagers in the near future, or work with teenagers or have grandchildren that are teenagers? Again, a lot of you. So there is a difference between us using social media as adults and teenagers using social media. And a lot of it does have to do with the brain. So social media, really, when you break it down, it's entertainment. It's an entertainment technology. And I know that it has become a method of communication for a lot of adults and kids. We have, the messengers. We have, I know a lot of schools and teams use them now to communicate with each other. They have groups and pages and things like that. So it's almost impossible to disconnect sometimes, or at least it feels almost impossible. But we survived for a long time without this. And remember that these platforms are tied to advertising. And that's one of the big things about social media that we don't always take into consideration, all of them. And there are some things that we may not think of as social media. My oldest child is 11 years old. He does not have a smartphone and won't for a while. So social media is not, in my mind, was not really something we were dealing with yet. But then I realized, well, he does play Fortnite on his PlayStation or his iPad. That's a form of social media. These video games even now are a form of social media. They are tied to the internet. They're tied to other people. They're tied to their friends. They can be tied to strangers if you don't have them set up correctly, and they're tied to advertising too. YouTube. My son loves to watch YouTube. We had to really filter that content down and make sure that we were watching everything that he was seeing, because, again, it wasn't that he was watching anything inappropriate, but people can comment, people can direct you to other links, advertisements can pop up, all kinds of things can come up there that we're not looking for. So social media is not just, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, those things. Those are the biggest ones, but we have to remember that there's gaming and things in there too that younger kids that are not yet teenagers are experiencing and getting drawn into already. So social media flat out was not designed for middle schoolers or even really high schoolers. It's there, they use it, but it was not designed for them. Their brains, and we're speaking physically, are not developed yet to the point where they can manage it safely. And that's not, I don't care how mature a teen may be, physically speaking, your frontal lobe, does anyone know how old you are when your frontal lobe is fully developed? 25, that's right. And our frontal lobe is where we make all of our decisions and where we have our higher reasoning. So if that's not developed yet, you're physically not capable of always making the best choice on your own. The frontal cortex is also where they manage staying on task. So they physically cannot manage all the distractions and the temptations and the things that come with social media. So you can teach all the rules you want, and that's great, and you should, but you can't teach the maturity that needs to come along with that and can kind of set them up for inappropriate use. So this is not to say ban all social media, burn it, forget it, but there are things that we as parents, as teachers, as leaders need to be doing to make sure that we're on top of it. Social media is an addictive form of screen entertainment, and I mean that in a very physical way. I had a graphic that I was going to show you guys, but it wouldn't go into my PowerPoint the way I wanted it to, so it is in one of the handouts that you guys will take, but some of the physical effects that come with social media, the limbic center in your brain is where you produce dopamine, which gives you that craving feeling. This is activated and dopamine's released when you're using social media. So it can create a physical addiction in your brain. The distraction, it interferes with concentration. How many of us, even as adults, feel like we just need to pick up our phone and look at it for no reason? No one's texting us, no one's calling us, but maybe we missed something and we need to check it. The adrenal glands, they release cortisol and adrenaline. That can imbalance the hormones for teens and cause stress, anxiety, and in some cases even depression. We've seen an increase in depression and anxiety in teens that is correlated with the rise of social media. So we have to take that into consideration. Oxytocin is produced when we use social media, and that's what we call the cuddle chemical. It's almost like you fall in love with your phone. Physically speaking, chemically speaking, you can fall in love with your phone. And then just general wellness, lack of sleep from being on the social media too late, scrolling can lower self-esteem. All of these things, these are physical things that are affecting kids' brains when they're using social media. Tweens, especially, so I'm talking like middle school here, have, as a general rule when we're speaking about their development, they have what's called a more is better mentality. It's why if you have a tween, a middle schooler, you see them doing things that seem really big and over the top because it's always better to get the laugh, or it's always better to outdo the other one. They're always trying to outdo each other at this age, that more is better. And that leads to an obsession with things like friends and likes and shares and all those things that happen on social media. Comparing themselves to other kids around. How many people liked my photo? Well, I don't care who liked it. I just care about the number. So that can lead to them adding people into their friend circles and things that they don't know in real life. And sometimes this can even be a friend of a friend, or what they think is a friend of a friend. No, my friend from this school wants to friend you so that we can all hang out sometime. Sure, go ahead. I've never met this person face-to-face and probably never will, but we'll have this relationship and things can go down. I've seen cases in my office of the friend of a friend thing where it's turned into a case of extortion. And turns out these numbers are running through Canada and they look local. And there's no way for the police to trace them because they're running through Canada. So this happens more often than you think because we don't hear about it. Nobody really talks about those cases, but they do happen right under our nose. Another side effect that we're seeing with social media is that kids are losing their social skills because they are becoming so accustomed to interacting with a phone or a device that they don't know how to act face-to-face anymore. Everything goes through a screen. And when we were young, a lot of us picked up a phone and called our friends if we couldn't go out and ride our bike to someone's house or drive to someone's house. We were on the phone. Teenagers now do not talk on the phone. That's not really a thing anymore. It's all text or Snap or whatever. It's typing. And that eliminates that whole need to have the nonverbals, to read other people's nonverbals, the inflection of your voice, all of those things get lost in the text, and they don't have to do it anymore. And so when they come together, sometimes they don't know the most appropriate ways to interact with each other because they've been doing this on a screen for so long. It can cause a loss of connection with families, which is really, really important in these developing years. That connection with the family should be the strongest one they have. I know that friends are everything in middle school and high school, but that base of the family connection needs to still be the primary for healthy development. There can be a healthy relationship with social media, but I'd be willing to bet that most of us, especially teens, don't have it. So that would mean you rarely have an active presence in your feed. You're not posting, you're not putting status updates, you're not putting pictures up, you're not commenting on other people's pictures, you're not maybe once a day you might get on and check something. How many of us get on more than once a day? A lot of people. If your child can't do homework or any other activity without at least picking up their phone once and checking it, that's a problem. If it's sitting there, especially if it's buzzing, it's nearly impossible to keep going. Even if they say, okay, I'm not going to pick it up. I know I'm not allowed to pick it up. I'm not going to touch it. It's still in their brain. Who was that? What do they want? What am I missing? Do I need something? Even if you don't pick it up, it's still in the back of your mind somewhere. If you're still active with your friends and face-to-face, more so than you are on the screen, that's healthy, and your relationship with the family is staying strong. If we're doing all of these things, then yeah, that's a very healthy relationship with social media, but for most teens, that's not happening because their development and their brain's just not going to allow that. So what are they doing on social media? What do they do when they log in? In fact, when social media first came out, I was still in college and didn't understand what the point of it was. I lived in a dorm, and I had all these people that were my friends on Facebook, because Facebook was the first big thing that came out, lived in my building. So I didn't understand why I had to go on this platform to look and see what they were doing and see the pictures of what they were doing. We didn't have smartphones either, so it's not like you could just post a picture from your phone. You had to deliberately hook up your camera and download the picture, when it's probably faster to walk two doors down the hall and knock. So I didn't really get it. So obviously I use it now. It's become part of my life, whether I like it or not. But it made me wonder, what are we doing when we get on social media? So with teenagers, the number one thing they're doing is what we call lurking. I don't think I have this up here. It's basically when you're just checking the social media, it causes stress. So 21% of kids say that they're going on to see if other kids are saying mean things about them. 36% see if anyone's doing something without them, which can become a form of bullying in its own right. Here there's this group of four friends. Three of them went to do something together. We're mad at this friend over here, so we didn't invite her, and we posted pictures of the three of us doing something without her so that she knows that we're out with and we didn't invite her. And then 61% say they want to see if their posts, whatever they've posted, are getting likes and comments. And if they're not getting likes and comments, that can lead to a lower self-esteem. Because, again, they're into those numbers. Why is no one liking or commenting on what I posted? It must not be worth anything, therefore I must not be worth anything, is kind of how the brain tends to go. There's constant comparison. I always like to think of social media being the highlight reel of our lives. Most of us don't post the difficult moments. We post the best of the best. Look how much fun we're having. Look how great this thing is that we just did. We're not posting those really tough moments. So when you look through everyone's social media and you start comparing that to your life, you're comparing 100% of your life to the top 2% of theirs. But as a teenager, that really looks like, wow, I'm failing. So that decreases self-worth, self-esteem. It can lead to bullying one way or the other. Sometimes when self-esteem goes down, that child can become the bully in an attempt to pick their self-esteem back up. Another big one is that fear of missing out. What am I missing if I'm not on social media? If I'm not checking it? If I'm not checking my text? If I'm not checking my Instagram? What have I missed that everybody else has seen? So it can create kind of this state of hypervigilance and a constant state of distraction. Constant. So I want to talk a little bit about, I have a graphic on here. I'm sorry, this is not in the best order it could have been. I have a graphic on here somewhere that goes over some of the most common, there it is, the most common apps that you should know about. Taking a look at these up here, and I have a hand out of these out here too. Is there anything on here that people don't recognize? Some of them you don't. So Snapchat, I would guess most people know what Snapchat is. Instagram, I would guess most people, maybe Kick. Some of the other ones might look a little less familiar, but that's because they're coming up. And notice that Facebook is not on here. So for the more of the adult generation, Facebook is either what we grew up using or what we've learned to use in our adult lives. It's not really being used anymore. Everything's shifting to things like Snapchat and Instagram, where it's very brief, it's very quick. There's direct messages, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit when we're talking about device checks. Things like Snapchat and Kick, everything disappears within, a max of 24 hours, sometimes less. So there's this feeling of security. I can say whatever I want. I can post whatever I want. I can send pictures of whatever I want, and it's going to disappear. It's going to be gone. Not realizing, well, it's not really gone. It's just not on somebody's screen anymore. So Bumble is kind of like the newer Tinder. It's technically a dating app. And you have to have a certain age. I think you have to be 18, but it doesn't check that. It's not verifying that. You can go on and say you're 18 and be 13, and it's not going to verify. So we have a lot of teenagers going on Bumble, creating fake pages, and sometimes even using fake pictures of themselves, just to create connections with different people, and then you can talk to them through this app, and it's not trackable through your cell phone provider. So if you think you're going to pull cell phone records and see who they're talking to, it's not going to show up on here. Snapchat is one of the most popular apps that's out there. It was one of the most used apps in 2018. This is, you know, with direct messages. This is posting to their stories. The big thing with Snapchat is that everything disappears after 24 hours. The other thing about Snapchat that a lot of people don't realize is it has a location piece on it. So if you're using Snapchat and if you're on it and somebody clicks on your picture, it's going to tell them exactly where you are in that moment. And if you're not on Snapchat at the moment, if you were on 20 minutes ago, it's going to tell them exactly where you were 20 minutes ago until you log in again, and then it's going to update your location. It's going to show them a picture of you on a map where you are in that moment. Anybody can find you. LiveMe, it's a streaming app. That one's not as popular yet, but it is coming up, and they have kind of their own digital currency within this one that you can use to pay for videos and photos and things. You exchange things back and forth. Again, one of the big things with this is the location services, much like Snapchat. You can, if someone's streaming, you can track down where they're streaming from. So if you have a teenager streaming a video thinking they're just putting something out there, that's kind of cool. A lot of times video games, they like to do the YouTube video games of themselves, or, you know, LiveMe is another way around it. It'll tell you where they're posting from. Oh, I skipped Kick. Kick is, it's a messenger, again. It deletes. There's no privacy settings on it. It's not tracked by your phone company. So, again, text message is the easiest way for parents to find out what kids are saying. So they just go around it using these other apps. Hala is a video chat app, but it's with people all over the world. You can just click a button and find somebody in another country that you want. It's kind of like a digital version of a pen pal, except that you're sending them all your information. Whisper, has anybody heard of Whisper? This one's getting bigger and bigger all the time. Whisper is a network that encourages people to go on anonymously and share their deepest secrets. And then they get posted in kind of this anonymous format. Again, location. That's the big thing with all these. Location. You can post something on Whisper and think no one's ever going to know it's you until they click the location button, and it shows you sitting at your house posting that, and they can pretty quickly figure out whose house that is, whose address that is, even if they don't know you. Ask.fm is big for cyberbullying. Calculator is a huge one. Does anybody know about this one? Has anybody heard of this calculator apps? There's lots of different ones. This is what we consider a vault app. Vault apps are a disguise for something else. So if you look at your kid's phone, you see a calculator app, and you open it, it looks like a calculator, and it will function as a calculator until you type in a certain code into the calculator, and suddenly the calculator disappears, and now we have a secret vault for photos and text messages and videos and things that no one is supposed to see. There's a lot of versions of this, but the calculator is probably the most common one. You can even hide if you go into the browser in here, it hides your browser history. So if a child knows that a parent is keeping track of their browser history on either they're checking it, or you have one of those things like that Disney Circle that manages your family's Wi-Fi use and you can check browser history, it won't show up if it's in this calculator app unless you have the code and open it up and find it. Hot or not, it's kind of losing popularity, but it's pictures, you know, who's attractive and who's not. I don't think I need to explain why that's a problem. And then there's a couple other smaller ones over here that you can look over. Instagram, again, one of our biggest ones. Instagram's not bad, but you have to keep in mind it's not just the posts that they're looking at. There's direct messages, and then there's a thing called Finstas, which is the fake Instagram accounts, which you can toggle between the two. So if you open your child's app and just scroll through their Instagram page, what are they posting, what are they seeing, who are they following, who's following them, all that stuff, it all probably looks clean. But they can go on, and there's a little button that they can toggle up at the top right-hand corner that switches to the Finsta, and that's where they're posting the things that they don't want you to see, because you're not going to be able to find those. Can you go back to the beginning of the slides? I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of what we can do. The first thing I want to point out with this is that we're not powerless against this. And the biggest comment that I hear from parents when we start talking about how to check the phones is privacy. Well, I would first say that privacy does not exist when you're a teenager and you have a cell phone. A cell phone's a privilege. If you feel that you need privacy on your phone, then get a flip phone where nothing can really be, there's nothing to be hidden. You're either talking on it or you're basic texting on it, and that can be tracked through the phone company if need be, and that's it. So if you feel like privacy is what you need, then a flip phone's for you. Other than that, you as the parents, it is your job to be monitoring this all the time. So the first thing you're going to want to do, well, actually, I would say the first thing before you even give your child a cell phone, I have one of these. It's a handout, again, in the back. This is a cell phone contract that we use. Sarah and I both use this in our office all the time when we know that a tween or a teen is going to be getting a cell phone. So this kind of, and you can edit this as you need, but this kind of talks about the basic guidelines that come with having a phone. And one of the points on here is, I understand that my parents can go through the contents of my phone at any time, with or without my knowledge. I agree to surrender my cell phone immediately to my parents if asked. I will not delete my texting history without permission, and I will fully cooperate in showing my parents the contents on my cell phone. So a lot of kids don't want to agree to that, but that's part of having the phone. So if you give this to them and you guys go over it before the phone even comes out of the box and you sign it and your child signs it, that kind of eliminates that whole, you don't give me any privacy, you don't give me any privacy argument. So the first thing you want to do once you get the phone is, depending on whether you have Android or iPhone or whatever it is you're getting, you want to look at all the parental settings, and you want to look at what kind of things your mobile carrier offers too, because a lot of them have certain things you can turn on and off where you can watch through the phone companies. If you have I have the Verizon app on my phone, so I can look through and see what's happening. You have to also set up the privacy controls within every single app. Did I go out? I don't know. I'm good. Okay. You can't just set it for the phone. You have to set it for if you have to go into Instagram, you have to go into Snapchat, you have to go into Facebook, whatever it is they're using, and you have to set the privacy settings in each one because it won't carry over. And then remember, if they're using public Wi-Fi, your settings kind of go out the window. So checking the device randomly and often. So as long as your child's in high school and living in your house or under high school, this rule applies. So when I say often, I mean maybe once a week. I don't mean every day you have to get on the phone. But it should never be announced. It doesn't need to be at the same time, every week, every time, not the same day, random. And when you say for a device check, you say, it's time for a device check now, they hand you the phone immediately. There's no time to go in and, well, let me just do this, let me just answer this text. You hand it over right away. As a parent, you should have all passwords for every single app they use and all passcodes for any device that they're using so that you can get into it at any time. If you're doing these things, there's really no need for you to go through it when they're not around. That can feel like a violation of trust with teenagers. So the best thing for your relationship with them to safely monitor this is to do it with them there so they can see everything you're doing. That doesn't mean they can tell you, no, don't click that, don't do that, don't open that, don't read that. You can still do whatever you need to do, but they're sitting there, so they know exactly what you're doing. So there's not this fear of, I left my phone on the counter, did mom go through it when I was in the shower? So we talked about that. We can move to the next one here. So with your child present, have a document with all the passwords. We talked about the calculator app. Here's a couple other what we consider the vault apps that look like other things that you're going to want to get into. One of the quickest ways to check this, if you see an app like a calculator or a game that you've never really seen them play and you think it looks okay, I open it and it looks like a calculator and it functions, go to the settings of the phone. On both Android and Apple, there's a place where you can look to tell you how much time they've been spending on a particular app. So if they've been on a calculator app for 3 hours a day, that probably doesn't make sense. So if you see things like that in the usage, that could kind of give you a hint that something is not as it seems. There are a couple of apps that you can use to track the time that kids are using on each app too. If you don't feel like it's tracking appropriately in the phone settings themselves, Moment for iPhones and Quality Time for Androids will give you a screen update of they've used this app for exactly this many minutes this week. So you can kind of look at it that way too. Let me go to the next. Text messages obviously are still a thing, but kids are smart and they're not using text messages as much for things that they don't want getting out there, that they don't want people seeing. But I would still look through them. You don't need to go through and read every single text. Maybe just pick a couple. See whose name appears the most. Who's at the top of the texting list, the top five. Those are the people they're texting the most often or the most recently. Any unknown numbers you want to open, even if it's a group chat and there's numbers you don't know in there, you're going to want to open those and just kind of scroll through and see what's going on in there. Or names that you don't recognize. You can look at the photos in a text without having to read the messages. So if you just want to see what's being sent back and forth, there's a place you can open that and see every photo they've exchanged with that person or that group. And then I would just pick a couple of apps each time you check. You don't have to check every single app every single time, but make it random again. Who are they following? Who's following them? What kind of secret accounts are out there? Know how to access those secret accounts. If you Google that, you'll find all kinds of information on how to get to those. So make sure you're looking for those. Look at what they're posting. And look at who's commenting on their posts. Because a lot of times kids allow followers that they don't know because those numbers go up. And people can take things from that. You can screenshot anything. Now, Snapchat has the benefit of telling you if somebody screenshots something that you've posted or sent them, but you can't do anything about it. So it'll say, hey, you sent them this photo and they screenshotted it, now they have it forever, but what are you going to do? If this is a person you don't know in real life, they have this picture, you cannot take it back. Let's see. Can you go to the next? I'm not sure what comes up here next. There we go. Okay, so this is a page of resources. I have this on a printout, too, for you. The one at the bottom is one of the ones I wanted to talk about first. It's called Wait Until 8th. Has anybody heard of this? This is a movement that's catching on in a lot of places, which is Wait Until 8th grade for the cell phone, which I know sounds like a really long time when kids are now getting them in 4th, 5th, 6th grade. But 8th grade is really what the push is for right now. The longer you can delay access to the social media world, the more time that a child has to mature. And it encourages more authentic relationships to be developed between themselves and their peers while their brain's still in that formation stage. Follow their social media accounts if they have them. That might mean that you yourself need to get a social media account. If you are not a social media user and your child is, you're going to have to become one. So whatever they have, whatever accounts they have, you need to have one too. Watch the clock. Screen time does matter. In our young kids, I know it's a matter of managing, you know, how much time they play on the little Kindle or the iPad or whatever it is, the little games that they're playing, the videos they're watching. But as they get older, it's less of that and more of the social media. So watch what your kid's using. And again, the most phones will track your usage, your daily usage, your weekly usage, how many hours. Help them plan face-to-face time with their friends. Encourage that. If you have time, if you're able, say, hey, you know, how about I drive you and your friends to the movies or something, whatever it is that they want to do to hang out. Why don't you have so-and-so over this weekend to spend some time here? Or encourage those face-to-face interactions. Offer what you can to help make those things happen. Have non-tech times in your home. That includes you, too. So when kids come home from school, or when everybody's home, the kids are home from school, parents are home from work, everybody's there, have an unplugged time. Everybody's devices go away, including the adults. No, even if you still have work to do or whatever, homework, I know homework needs to be done on the laptops now. Everything goes away for a little while. So lead by example, too. If they see you on your phone all the time, they will throw that back in your face every time that you try to tell them they're on their phone too much. Some of the resources up here that are really helpful, one of the books that I really like, The Boogeyman Exists, is in your child's back pocket, is a really helpful book. Talks about a lot of the safety. So that's more of a parent book. The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, that's this one right here. This is for the teenagers. So this is 21 Tips to Posting in an Insecure World. I love this book. This is written for teens in a very readable way, and it has a Christian basis as well, which I think it's fantastic. So if, you know, just looking at the back here, some of the tips that it outlines, know the app before you snap, peek at your privacy settings so you know who's peeking at you. Don't post anything you wouldn't want grandma, your boss, and Jesus seeing because he's on Insta. So there's some good things in this book. There's a couple of videos that I have here. This is a CNN special, Being 13, I'm not going to play them for you, but if you want to look them up. Being 13, Inside the Secret World of Teenagers was a special they did on tweens using social media. And then another one that I know Sarah's going to use tonight in her group with the teenagers is The Dangers of Social Media for Teens. It's called the 6-Click Experiment, where they had someone come in and do an experiment with multiple teens where they said, let me see how much I can find out about you in 6 clicks just from you telling me your name. And within 6 clicks, they had the most unbelievable amount of information on each one of these kids, where they hang out regularly, who they're hanging out with, where they live, where they work if they have a job, how old they are, where their friends live. I mean, so much information that you don't think is out there, but in 6 clicks, this guy can find everything that he would need to know. If you're a predator, that's a gold mine. If you're looking for a kid, if you want to groom someone for some type of inappropriate relationship or for, you know, I hate to say this because it sounds scary, but to lure into sex trafficking, because it does start on social media a lot of times, this is how they do it. They go on and say, okay, where does this kid hang out most of the time and who are they hanging out with? So that they can make it seem like their relationship just formed naturally by chance. They just happen to meet this kid, and they happen to have the same interests. They use other teens to do this. So if you have a 50-year-old man running this, he's not going to go try and befriend the 16-year-old. He's going to send a 16-year-old girl in to do it for him. So, you know, kids are easily pulled into this. If you have this other girl coming up, hanging out where you're hanging out, likes the same things that you like, has all the same interests, and you develop this relationship, they can use that to their advantage. So there are some scary things that are out there. But there can be some benefits, too, if you're doing it right. So my best advice to you would be, you know, all the things we talked about with the checks, with the contracts, making sure that everybody's on the same page, just being involved as much as you can, you know, not giving free rein of the social media. I know it's easy to do. I've done it with my son. It took me a little while when he first started watching the YouTube. It took me a little while to realize, oh, this is not as safe as I thought it was. This is not him just watching these little Minecraft videos that I thought. So we had to kind of really come down on that, really check everything he's looking at. We have all devices used, any videos and things used in a public space. You know, doors are allowed to be closed when they're doing that. So all these things that may seem like a little overboard are not, because this is the world we're living in now. So if we're going to use this, if we're going to go in this direction, we have to do it as safely as possible. Does anybody have any questions? Did I stay in my time limit?
Let's thank Lindsay for her time here with us. We really appreciate her coming out and giving us those tools and those, I don't want to call them tricks, but like those tools. I mean, that's what they are, and so we appreciate that. I just wanted to close with this verse that you all know. Music team, I think we'll forego the song for time's sake. We'll give that to you, the time, I think. no, it's quite all right. Valuable information. Proverbs 3, 5 through 6, you probably know this verse. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways submit to him and he will make your path straight. And I want to leave you with that verse because we can so easily get caught up in these social media kinds of things, and we can get caught up in what people might be saying about us or what we think people might be thinking about us, and all the dangers of the trails of thought that go down the path with an online presence in an online world. So put your focus, put your trust with all your heart in God. Don't lean on your own understanding. Go with God. So let us pray. God, we go with you, and we ask that you go with us as we leave here today. We know that we can't control everything around us, and we can't control where social media goes, and we can only control our response to that. So may we respond to these relationships that are forming and developing in an online world in a way that's positive and pleasing to you, so that we submit to you in the path that you make for us, and that path would be straight. And for families who are navigating this for the first time or the second time or how many times with their children, we ask that you lift us up and you bless us and guide us. And for grandparents and families who are going through this, or for those who are yet to come into it, we can only imagine what will come down the road for each of us as we encounter it. Lord, keep us safe in it as we navigate, but may we use it for your glory. And we praise you and thank you. And for this time together, it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. God bless you all this morning.